come to the 64th annual OA birthday party. Together, we get better. In person, January 12th through 14th at the LAX Hilton in Los Angeles, California. Meet fellows from across the globe for a weekend-long extravaganza of workshops, panels, special interest speakers, entertainment, fellowship, laughs, and recovery. Highlights include body image workshop, weekend-long big book study, sober eating workshop, keynote speakers with unique stories, dance party and comedy show, yoga and meditation, meetings and meetups for LGBTQIA, BIPOC, Spanish language, young people, and AAPI members, plus a boutique where you can shop till you drop. Registration is now open at oabirthday.com. Staying the night? Book your room now at a discounted rate through the oabirthday.com website, and act fast because rooms sell out quickly. There is a solution. You'll hear from speakers who have various versions of this disease who live happy, joyous, and free. Because together, we get better.
Welcome to the OA Virtual Kitchen Sink Meeting Podcast. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live and how to donate to support this meeting and our podcasts. The opinions expressed on the Kitchen Sink podcast are those of the individual speakers and do not represent OA as a whole. And now, our speaker.
Would you indulge me in a quiet time, please? Thank you so much. I'm Rose, compulsive overeater and anorexic, and I'm so honored and happy to be speaking today. And I'm also very intimidated. I'm aware that this meeting has been around a long time. When the pandemic started and I started doing a lot of Zoom meetings, I listened to this meeting. I know these things are recorded. It haunts me a little bit. And so what I just did was what my very first sponsor in another program told me to do, which was to ask God to speak through me, which just helps me to get out of my head and stop trying to figure out, decide, or choose what's best, because I am good at intellectualizing things. I was born with that ability, and that is not what has brought me serenity around food, and it's not really what has helped me Overeaters Anonymous. So of course there are times when our left brain comes in pretty handy. That's just a long way of saying I really don't know what will be helpful to anyone here, but I trust that my higher power got me here for a reason. And since I have experienced kind of both ends of the spectrum of overeating and undereating, I want to read from an OA pamphlet. It's called OA Members Come in All Sizes. You probably can't see it. And for newcomers, it's maybe, a couple of bucks or something on the OA website. OA Members Come in All Sizes. And I just want to read from the first page. Many of us come to OA desperate and unhappy as we listen to those who have been in OA a long time. We come to recognize that it is not how much we weigh or even how much we eat or don't eat that brings us to OA. It is the ways we have desperately tried to control our food, eating, and weight. The ways we have desperately tried to control our food, eating, and weight. And for me, in the throes of the worst manifestations of both ends of the spectrum, that's what it was. I was trying to control the food, the eating, and the weight. In retrospect, I realize I was trying to control something. And that takes me to my childhood. I am going to qualify. Sometimes I'll hear, you know, especially long-timers say, oh, I don't want to spend a lot of time on the ugly part. I just want to focus on the experience, strength, and hope. But I think it's important, especially for newcomers, to be able to identify. And it's also important for me to hear and be reminded of what my disease really looked like, because it's been a while since I did these extreme behaviors. So I grew up in an alcoholic home that became pretty violent when I was about in middle school. We know that addiction progresses and alcoholism progresses and violence apparently progresses. I remember being three with my mom, whom I love dearly. She's on the other side now. Love you, Mom. And she was hungover and passed out. And I was three and I was alone. My older sisters and brothers were at school. My dad was at work trying to slay the dragons at work. And so I was just alone a lot, sometimes till about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I just remember climbing up on, cabinets and stuff to get whatever food was there, and if it came in a box or something or other. I remember even picking up the phone back when people had phones that you picked up to answer and trying to talk to adults and trying to give some kind of straight, I even remember creditors calling, you owe this bill. And so, I was probably pretty scared. Probably pretty scared. When my mom woke up, she could be really, really kind. And she could also be really irritable and discontent, which is how the big book describes alcoholics. And I'm also an alcoholic. I started out in the beverage program. So now I understand what was going on with her. She couldn't handle it. And there I was. So what was there for me was food. It was safe in that I didn't have to go out in the house and talk to strangers. I didn't have to turn the stove on, which would have been dangerous. Didn't have to use any sharp utensils. And at three, you kind of want to watch those things, but it was there in the house. There were always sweet things. And that became just a source of comfort. I'm grateful for the food. I'm grateful for it. I really am. I'm a trauma survivor. I'm working now at my age, in trauma recovery, which is really brilliant. There's so much research done I will not go into because it's an outside issue. But I will say I've needed outside help. The big book is very clear on saying, please avail yourself of outside help, professionals, doctors, psychologists. It lists them. So I've done that. In any case, I learned early on that food was my friend. In middle school, I can remember by then things were more violent. My mom was a rager at night, which makes it hard to sleep. So pretty early in my life, I discovered that nighttime was not safe and I should not sleep. So I still struggle with night times. Much better, much improved. But that's how it went down for me. And I would just come from school where there was just junk going on with these girls, teenagers. We know how crazy we are. They were, right? You're my friend today. You're not my friend today. I've got horses. You have an old car. And I would run to the kitchen. I would make a beeline to the kitchen. We had a long house and a long hallway and just go to the fridge. And there was always good Southern food there. I grew up in the South and I would eat all of it that I could stuff. Now, the only downside was my dad, who was the good guy, the good parent, would be unhappy with me. And he was not an angry person. So he would just say, oh, did you eat the whole pan? Oh my goodness, you need to just keep it, just eat your part. And that felt like this blanket of, oh, just yuck of dirt and shame and hideousness. So there I was, So went to college, had a meal ticket. I thought that was heaven because they literally said, this little ticket will get you into this cafeteria anytime it's open. You can come back six times. We don't care how much you eat. I thought I had died and gone. So, I've been drinking and fast forward. So tried really hard to restrict. And so I pretty much binged and restricted for many years. And if not binged, just ate and ate and ate. A binge, I consider eating until I literally physically can't hold anymore and then probably passed out. But it was always around food. And I learned I could really eat unhealthily with healthy foods and stuff. So I did that for years. And I'm in a business where how you look is important. And, I remember being in my 20s and when my depression first started and my anorexia first started and people complimenting on how great I look. And I literally wanted to kill myself a lot of the time. A lot of the time. And that went on for about 5 years of me seeing how low I could get the number on the scale and really wanting to die. And it turned out my environment around me was out of my control. We actually moved. I ran a business in my former marriage. We moved twice a year. That's not good for someone with attachment issues, with abandonment issues. I moved 30 times in 15 years. So, things were just like my childhood. Felt like there was no control. Felt like it. And so the anorexia also made me secretly kind of glad because we all know thin is better than fat. We all know that. I am being sarcastic for anyone who's listening to this and can't see my face. So secretly I was like, oh, this is good. I don't have to, maybe I can buy that tiny skirt. Well, I have a picture of myself in a really tiny skirt. And of course I look sick. I look sick and I look back at that and I get so sad. That person was sick. That person wanted to die. As my depression lifted, I started to eat more and came out of the anorexia. And I'm really grateful. As my life got a little better, then I started kind of overeating and restricting again. But my mom, meanwhile, had become my best friend. She had come from being my worst enemy to being my best friend. Two things happened to facilitate that. She stopped
Excuse me,
drinking
Rose,
suddenly.
that was 10 minutes, so you have 9 minutes left.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. I have no sense of time, so thank you for that. So she stopped drinking after my father died, which was around 1987. She just quit. And I went through a divorce, and what I believed to be true about my marriage and about my then husband turned out not to be true, and my whole world was turned upside down. And I needed her. My sister had died. She needed me. My sister had died very suddenly. We really needed each other. And so I was flying to Kentucky to both check on her with her health, which was not good, but also because I needed her. She was my best friend. The 12 steps made that possible. 12 steps made that possible. I was not in OA yet, but I was in the other beverage program. So she died inevitably, and I was mad at God. And in 2001, 2000, she died, and I gave myself permission to eat whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted, and I didn't care what men thought, and that was the first. I didn't care what anybody thought. I had at least three sizes of clothing in my closet. I did not care. And it was kind of freeing at first. So I would unplug the phone. That's back when phones could be unplugged. I would pull the shades. And all I did was work and eat. And I told myself towards the end that all I really have to have is really the eating and the work. I did. I remember having this conversation. I know it's bad. I get up every day. I promise myself I'm not going to binge again tonight. But if I just have this, it'll be okay. So what my binging looked like was I would eat like a lady during the day in the afternoon, and then I would come home and 6 o'clock, I would start eating. I would eat whatever was there. It could be food that was stuck to the refrigerator. It could be molded. It could be in the carpet. It could be in the folds of my couch. And then I would count my pennies, and I didn't have a lot of money, and I would go out at night in Chicago. We all know that's safe. And I would just go around in my neighborhood and go from convenience store to convenience store because we all know they care what I'm eating. They don't actually. I learned they don't. That guy that is at the register, he didn't care if I come in for two things. So anyway, one night it stopped working. I do not know why it was that night, but I was in the fetal position in my bed. It was about 11 o'clock at night. I lived in a studio apartment, an apartment building in Chicago, and I screamed out. I yelled. I said, God, you have to do something. This is killing me. You have to do something. And the next day I went to my first Overeaters Anonymous meeting. I had known about OA for years. I'd gone to a meeting in the 80s. People looked heavy. They had one woman had a big gulp drink. I thought, I'm not like that. And so, but this time was my time. It was my time. So I want to share that because I think that's important. If anyone is worrying, I wish I'd gotten here sooner. I wish I'd whatever. I wish. It was my time to come in, and I was ready, and that was grace. That was a gift. I was ready. So I did, I worked the steps. That means several things to different people. I noticed a reading in for today. It's actually tomorrow's reading. There is only one for today is a way of living. There's only one hard and fast rule in sponsorship. To let those I sponsor know that in OA, they have freedom of choice in what they will eat, how much they will weigh, and how they will work the program. That's a lot. It's a lot of freedom. So I balance that freedom today by adopting tools that I have seen work for other people. I haven't really invented anything. And these worked for me early on. Early on, I adopted what's called a food plan. I did not have money for a nutritionist, so my first sponsor just said, "You're kind of my weight. Write this down, see if it works." I did, and it worked great. What I realized was I didn't know how to eat. So whatever I was doing with food did not look like what other people do. I didn't sit down for meals. I didn't say, "This is the time to eat. This is not the time." So it really just helped give me structure. And very gradually, I lost weight and without thinking about it, right? So I do still follow a food plan given to me by a nutritionist. I don't follow it perfectly, but I do watch my red light foods. The main one for me is sugar. It's kryptonite for me, and it leads to other,
That was sorry. Sorry, Rose. That was 5 minutes, so you have 3 minutes left.
oh, there is a God. I have 3 minutes left. So anyway, it's a gateway drug for me. And so there are other things I don't eat because that works. I believe very strongly in sponsorship. I recently parted ways with my sponsor and I'm looking for a new sponsor. It's an uncomfortable place for me. And I'm going to find one as soon as I possibly can, but I have learned it's important to have the right one. It's important to have the right one. I do work the steps. For me, that looks like writing, reading and writing. Reading, it could be OA literature, it could be AA literature, and writing about that and possibly discussion. But there are tons of ways to work the steps. And the people in this meeting will have a wealth of information about all those ways to do it. But the main thing I did is I opened my heart to a higher power that greater than myself. The three rules in an alcoholic family are don't trust, don't talk, don't feel. I now feel. I talk. I trust. Not always at the right time. And sometimes I don't trust, especially with my partner. But I have ways to get back to an open heart. This is a spiritual program. This is a spiritual program. I can't explain it. But somehow when I put down the food a day at a time and a power greater than myself reminds me that they're here, I get healed. And thank you so much for letting me talk.
This is the time for questions only. There is no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leader are her own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. If you asked a question last week, please wait until the first three questions have been asked before raising your hand. If you have a question, please click the raise your hand icon.
Hi, Rose. Thank you so much for your share. Would you talk about what you do on a daily basis to keep your spiritual connection?
Thank you so much for asking that. At the end of every, whenever I share, I suddenly realize, oh, I didn't talk about that. It is the daily things for sure. I go to a lot of meetings, first of all. Zoom allows me to go to a lot of meetings. I don't necessarily go to one every day, but I go to at least four or five a week. That's one thing I do. Writing really helps me. I don't always get to it first thing in the morning, and I don't always do it. But most of the time, I write. And when I say write, I mean, I write as if nobody's going to read it. I write because I happen to write professionally. So I just write. 2 days ago, I had a problem that was just confounding me with my partner. And I just started writing about something I thought was not related. And then I ended up really having an insight. It's kind of crazy how it works. I definitely follow my food plan. My food plan happens to be 3 meals a day, with the option of one or two snacks. I pretty much always eat one snack. But again, that's just the way I do it. What else do I do? I pray all day. I do pray in the morning and at night and at meals, but I pray all day. Sometimes it's just help to calm me, please. Sometimes it's just what's the next right thing? What else? Oh, I make phone calls. I know it's old school. I know it is, and I do believe in it. Texting is great. I certainly will text and answer texts, but I call people. And the people who pick up on the first ring, that's unbelievable. But the people who call me back, they are in a category all their own. And I try really hard to pick up the phone. I really do, because just hearing that voice saying something out loud, this happened to me. I did this thing. It was stupid. The sound of the voice is really helpful to me. So I do those things pretty much every day.
Thanks, Rose. So good to see you. Can you talk about relationships and how they've changed, being in a program to what it was like before, to what
Oh
it's like
my God.
now?
Yeah. Oh God damn. For me right now in my life, that's the $6 billion question. The first few steps are about the disease, right? And then they're all about relationships. And then if you stay long enough, everything's about relationships. So I'll tell you the one that was a success truly was my mom. I didn't have really any family members left. My sister died, a brother died, another brother was distant. Both my parents were, my dad was gone. So I really needed my mom, and I realized talking with my sponsor that the only way I was gonna to be with her was to meet her where she was. She was aging, she was pissed off, she'd lost a daughter. She's got people coming into her house wanting to give her medications. I mean, she grew up on a farm in the Depression. Really, gonna let people in my house. So I worked the steps every single time I interacted with her and was able to let go. I was able to do what the four today said, which is not give her advice, not get on her about her smoking. What happened was she moved closer towards me. And then we both started behaving in a way that was respectful. And then we got really honest. So that was truly a miracle. I mean, really a miracle. The other relationship I'm working on now, which is why I laughed, is my partnership of 20, good heavens, 22 years. And I adore this man and he adores me. And we just have been arguing like crazy, just in public. I mean, fighting over nothing, right? So we're in couples therapy and all this stuff, and it's fabulous. And I just this weekend, I was writing, he did his own kind of work he does, and I did mine, and things just shifted. And so I guess the thing for me with relationships is, the program tells me I can't do it alone. It tells me I'm powerless over that other person, and there are programs for that. It tells me God needs to enter in when things are insane. The second step says, you can restore me to sanity and turning it over. So I've been just working the first three steps like my life depended on it. And, we're human. So yeah, thank you for asking, Deb. What a great question.
Melissa.
Hi, Melissa, compulsive eater.
Thank you, Deb, for your beautiful share. Thank you so much. Can you share with us sort of like the evolution of your relationship with your higher power and what that looks like today? Thank you.
Oh man, I feel like if I had just written out a request list of questions people would ask me, that these would be the ones that I need to answer. So thank you for that wonderful question. First of all, I've always had a faith in what I call God. Always. I had a sense of it as a very young person. And I was really fortunate. I was taken to a church that did not abuse me. It did not berate me. It didn't use the religion as a weapon. And I am so lucky. I am so grateful for that. You know, I have so many friends, so many loved ones who just have to unlearn that stuff. And I didn't have that. At the same time, I was going to church with my dad, who kind of made me go, and I was listening to these sermons, and this minister was a sweet man, and my mom was raging at night. The police were coming to my house, and no one seemed to be able to do anything about it. I was going to school with the same clothes I had on. I was not eating at the right times. I wasn't sleeping at the right times. My teachers knew about it. No one could do anything. So I really didn't get the God thing. But I was praying for what I needed and wanted, right? I remember fast forward when my dad was sick before I got in the program, you know, I would just pray for him not, I'd say, don't die tonight. I don't know if I can get to Kentucky in time. Please don't take him now. I just need to tell him about this, right? In the meantime, I was receiving help and probably not realizing it. When I came into my first program, the beverage program, and confronted those steps, it was the first time in my life where my life had fallen apart to the degree that I could no longer hide it. Right? So I did not have another option, and I felt the same way coming into OA. So when I heard that step of the first step, we admitted we were powerless over God, our lives were manageable. For the first time in my life, that seemed okay. All right, I'll do that. I mean, I was a child of an alcoholic, controlling, you know, running the marionettes, manipulating to survive. And that was the first time where I said, I'm just going to free fall. And then the second step for me, once I understood what the word sanity meant, because I thought really insanity was being tied up in an institution, you know, but I realized, oh no, this is insanity. Then I took that risk of saying, maybe you can help me. And then the third step was so freeing. And then I turned everything over. So it helped me for my life to be so completely screwed up. Okay. And in OA, I'll just stick. By the time I was in OA, it was my mom dying. It was grief. It was my ex-husband. It was never having enough money, the one person I leaned on. So the idea that I could just hand it over, again, very dangerous in an alcoholic childhood world, but that I could just do that. And that is those are the things that changed my relationship with my higher power. So the difference for me is that I am able now to say, I do not have a clue what I am doing, God. Like, I don't have a clue. I did it this week. And can you help me? And here you go. That's different for me. So I never didn't feel there was something greater than myself. I always felt there was. Now that I have abstinence and I have sobriety and I have some recovery and with mental illness, I can look back at the times in my life where clearly I was helped along. Clearly, there was a divine presence. And that just reinforces my current belief, you know? And I love the way the founders wrote the second step. They didn't say, we believe. They said, we came to believe. And so for me, it's still a process, you know? I get mad and I get mad at God and I say, meh. And then I come to believe again. I hope that's helpful.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm Bob, compulsive overeater, recreational sugar addict. Thank you very much for your share. How important is service to your program?
Oh my God, another thing I forgot. This is so fantastic. I wish all meetings worked this way. You know, the big book states, and the big book is OA literature, the big book states that nothing will so much ensure immunity against the next drink as reaching out to a fellow, and it says alcoholic. It doesn't say, listen, it's a good idea if you've got the time. It doesn't say, add this to your list. It says nothing will work so well as doing service. So I do service, and most of the time it's not heroic. It's not even that time consuming. But if I am not dead, I say yes to speaking. You know, I mean, if I can't, I can't. One thing I do is I turn my camera on in meetings, on Zoom meetings. It's so brilliant that we can connect with people all over the world. I mean, it helped my program. And it's a little bit of a downer for me to have these black boxes. And I'm not criticizing anyone. There are legitimate reasons. You know, at the beginning of the meeting, I was eating my breakfast. I'm off camera. You know, if I'm driving, I'm off camera. Those are all things. But what I found, especially in the end of the pandemic, was that I was going off camera just because everybody else was. I thought, that's okay. And what I was doing was I wasn't focusing. I was playing with my phone. I was maybe, oh, pick up that thing that's on the floor over there. So what I found was that my quality of interaction became less. And then from my own experience, I do know that seeing people's faces means the world to me. It just means the world. So that's something I do as I turn on my camera. There are like small things to do. You know, there was a local workshop and I just volunteered and I don't even ask what do you need? They're not going to ask me to lift 60 pounds of something, you know? So I just showed up. And I didn't really have a title or anything, but it turned out there was a lot of little things to do. That the tech wasn't working right. You know, people needed greeting. So I'll just say yes, especially if I know I'm free and I'm in the area. Talking to people, sharing, giving leads. What else? Committees are challenging for me. If anyone really desperately thinks I'll be in addition to their committee, I probably would do it. But I don't really necessarily seek those out. I probably should do more. But calling somebody, and I have a list of names, and many of them, I have no idea who they are. But I did it day before yesterday. I called 6 people. I didn't really know who they were. 2 called me back, and it was really, so the phone, listening, texting. Service is everything. It's everything. Sometimes I kind of get the impression people in our wonderful program kind of look at it as a sacrifice, you know? I just was brought up, in the other program, it was a way to survive. It was that nothing will so much ensure, you know? Well, thanks for asking that.
Ryan, compulsive reader, my question for you is, how do you feel you hear your higher power?
I'm sorry, and how do I feel?
How do you feel that you hear your higher power's direction?
God, that's so great. A lot of times it's through my own intuition. And that comes for me, sometimes I'll just get a hit when I'm making it some kind of decision. I had prayed for a certain kind of a body worker and there were several I could choose from. And I just got really quiet and then I listened. I had already asked, so I listened and it just, a voice said to me, you don't want that person. You know, or sometimes I'll get but it's being in that state of receptivity when I'm not scrolling my phone. Which I do, but when I'm not, when I'm not trying to anticipate what my partner's going to do, when I'm in the present, and I ask, and then I'm quiet, it does tend to come to me. And usually it's a voice that's not really a voice. But then there are also, I get signs. I get crazy signs, man. I was in my birthplace, Kentucky, in March, and round, you know, the cemetery where my parents are buried. And there were these birds that would not leave me alone. There was a cardinal. I know it's going to sound ridiculous to some people, maybe not to others. It would not stop pooping on our car. My partner moved the freaking car. He moved it to the other side of the house. There weren't any trees around. They did it on there. So he started filming these birds. They started kind of doing this little dance by the window. These were two cardinals, a red cardinal and a, and, you know, I believe that was my parents trying to talk to me. I mean, my God speaks through people as well. If I get the right phone call at the right time. So some of it for me is recognizing it when it comes. I don't know if that even answered your question. I'm not even sure what you specifically asked.
That was great. Yeah.
Hi, it's Ellie again. Would you talk about sponsorship, Rose, and how you sponsor?
Sure. I do what was done with me. I don't really bear off of that very much. So what was done with me was that we had regular phone calls. When we can't meet in person, where we talk on the phone, and that's ranged from, you know, in the beginning, maybe three or four times a week to once a week, whatever seems right for this person, and working the steps, whether the person has worked them before or not. And that involves reading. I like the OA literature. I really like the OA 12 steps and 12 traditions. I think they just did a really good job with kind of revamping the AA stuff. And then I ask the person to write. I do ask them to write. And then they share what they, you know, what they have written about with me. Of course, I try to listen. I'm not very good at it. I want to give advice and I want to make suggestions. But, you know, certainly I send my food and I suggest they do that as well. And